Qua sopra.
Ai.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 203 of the show. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gungi-Ruzic, joined as always by Samuel Rowan. And as per usual, lots to dive into this week on this episode of the Third Sub Podcast. Vancouver Whitecaps, top of the table clash, New York Red Bulls, prime time, New York, the bright lights, everything they could have wanted. They go out and grind out a draw. We'll dive, of course, into what that means for the Whitecaps, who now get set to play Austin FC at home at BC Place, a big one for the club. You know, it's their official 50th anniversary match, so something that they will certainly look to put on a party for and cherish off the field, but a win on the field will only help for that, as well as their continued push up the Supporter Shield race. Meanwhile, lots of chaos in MLS. CPL continues. Not the greatest weekend for BC teams after a hot start. A bit of coming down to earth, I suppose, or just, you know, natural progression. Then lastly, of course, League One BC is back. That's the big news. Sam, I know, tucked into some, he tucked into a team's first ever match, which first of all is cool, but he also tucked into the start of a new season. That's relevant because the League One BC team this week plays in the Canadian Championship, which is pretty cool. Something I'm excited for. And then, of course, the action continues next week and for the rest of the summer, pretty much. So huge week ahead and huge week behind us. Sam, how are you holding up after all that? I mean, quiet games in terms of no Whitecaps to go to, no VFC, but you did tuck into some football at least.
Exactly. I really enjoyed being down there on the touchline, a little more intimate venue, getting to see some familiar faces too. I mean, from my time at SFU, a lot of people on both the men's and women's side from SFU when I was there on those Burnaby teams. Nice to see them still, you know, having this avenue to play. That's what's so great about League One BC, whether it's in the summer when you're off, you're back from college, or something you're doing after your college career. Some good entertaining footy, two good matches. So we'll dive into that on the back end. And I think the weather held up well enough that certainly by the second game, there was a pretty good atmosphere there as well. As you mentioned, I think in an understated but impressive result for the Whitecaps on the road. I feel like when these matches happen early on the weekend and it's just on Apple TV, maybe the buzz or the talk around it isn't quite the same. I don't know if the New York Red Bulls are like a particularly box office opponent, but I thought there was a lot of good things to take away from that match. And then we're going to look ahead to Austin, who, they're doing it in unsustainable or seemingly unsustainable ways, though we will talk about some of the stylistic differences, ways that they've matured. But this is as hot a team as there is in MLS right now. So the Whitecaps welcoming them to BC Place this upcoming weekend. That should be entertaining at the very least. Another good test for this Vancouver team that's, you know, passed most of them so far this season. We're going to go around MLS as always. And CPL, League One BC stuff. Man, it's been a good week, you know. Even when it's relatively quiet here in the home province, there's still lots to talk about and it's entertaining. So looking forward to tucking in as always.
Yeah, it was a rare week for me. My footballogy it remained unchanged for a weekend. So naturally, of course, I'm going to go change it with a midweek game just to get back on track. And of course, we got some League One BC to tuck into this weekend. But yeah, that's what happens when teams play cross country. And let's dive right into it. Of course, Whitecaps 1-1 result with New York. Look, I don't think it's a result you can be too mad at. Top team. And, you know, a team that can really hurt you. And the Red Bulls, you saw it, like, man, when Forsberg, Morgan, Van Zier, when they get going, it's just electric. At one point, there was about a 15-minute stretch in the first half where both teams just decided to stretch the game right out, and it almost made me dizzy watching with how much speed both teams were wanting to play with. It was so direct, so vertical. It was almost making me throw up just because you're on like a, it feels like you're on an amusement park ride, and the rides, it's not like one of those like nice little roller coasters or the wooden log ride at the PNE. No, it's like that one that all the kids wanted to do back in the day. I don't remember what it was called. It was like those death drops they do at PNE where it's just like, whoosh. That's what this game felt like for periods. And understandably, the Whitecaps didn't want to play that way. That's something, we're on the road against a team of this caliber. The Whitecaps can certainly punch that way. We've seen, right? They don't mind when the game gets open offensively, but as they saw against the LA Galaxy, and they learned, it's also a dangerous game to do that defensively against a good team. So they ultimately kept things quiet. They got a draw. I think that's fair to say. It's a point gained. You're playing an interconference team. And look, you, not much to take away from the actual points, other than, yes, they could have gone for it late with the red card. But other than that, you take this result to the bank. And what, look at that. 3 wins and 1 draw in 4 road games to start 2024 isn't bad at all either.
Yeah, I would echo most of what you said there. I mean, I think something that, as I look back on the match, for all that it was frantic in moments, and there was that end-to-end 15-minute spell, really, it's not like the Vancouver Whitecaps conceded a ton of grade-A chances. I think ultimately that moment in the second minute where Morgan took the shot and Takoko was forced to make a double save that followed the Vite Laborda mix up in the midfield, that was like the prime scoring opportunity of the match for the Red Bulls, full stop, really, because as we can get into, I mean, the goal they scored really should have been like a nothing play. So from open play, that was the one real, I guess, glaring moment of weakness or error for the Whitecaps. But other than that, yes, Takoko was forced to make 7 saves from inside the box, I think 8 saves total. But a lot of those, flipping back through the match, bad angles, you know, deflected shots, partially blocked shots, not necessarily looks where you go, oh, like that's a high XG scoring chance. So I think in that sense, you know, very much mission passed for the Whitecaps defensively. I think, you know, a bit surprised, honestly, not to see Utvik back in the starting 11. Kind of felt like that we might just see them run it back with the same back three, but back to your traditional Laborda and Blackman. I thought Ranko Veselinovic was really good. He was good in the air. You know, mind you, the Red Bulls don't necessarily have like a Christian Benteke style dominating aerial presence, but nonetheless, Ranko did the job, and I thought was, you know, sharper with his passing than the other two center backs, who, you know, I think you could tell just the way the match played out when they're forced to play those longer balls, and the Red Bulls are so disciplined defensively, they really kind of struggled to create meaningful possession. But I think that's okay on the road. You're not too worried about that. So yeah, I think I was impressed by just looking back through it, kind of with a very cold analytical mind. The Whitecaps, you know, they get their goal off a great bit of build-up play. Like, I love the way Ryan Gauld is able to sort of spread out the field, find Pedro Vite in space. Vite finds Raposo with the cutback. It's just a really nicely put together goal for Vancouver. And then they're able to, you know, create a couple other good scoring chances, two that Brian White probably looks back on and thinks he could have had at least one more goal, if not two from those. And so, you know, Vancouver did enough. They created 3 very high quality scoring chances. They converted one of them. They really only conceded 1 high quality scoring chance. And so, okay, maybe you're with all that information, you go, well, you could get a little bit lucky. You could come away with 3 points. You could get a bit unlucky. You could suffer a tough, but, you know, but kind of a good performance, 1-0 loss. Ultimately, it ends up being that middle of the road draw. I think that's a fair and like perfectly reflective result of the way the match went. And I think one that, you know, this is, we've been talking about early in the season, do the Whitecaps have what it takes to go against the top teams in the league? It's one thing to beat up on FC Dallas and beat up on San Jose. Now, I think we've seen over the last couple of weeks that, say, for example, a team like FC Dallas said, hey, this Western Conference is pretty even. Every point's going to be tough earned. So, I think that's something to consider as well. But they went into a tough place to play against a team in really good form. And I think not only came away with a result, but also like a result that was fully deserved. That wasn't like they got lucky and held on to a 1-1 draw. That was, as I said, I think an accurate reflection of the match. So I think this kind of, I'm answering a question from the notes here, but I think this kind of validates where the Whitecaps are at the moment near the top of the Western Conference. This is not an accident at this point. This is clearly where this team is capable of being. Again, I think that, we talked about before, it doesn't even feel like they've maybe hit full stride yet in terms of some of the things they can do. But yeah, I walk away encouraged, and they're gonna have to take some of those good things they've done over the last couple of weeks and test themselves against Austin.
Yeah, I think it was a good win, or not win, good draw. Sorry, I mean, it's a draw that can almost feel like a win, but I think no. Look, I think what's been interesting to see is that this Whitecaps team, clearly a lot of what they're doing good isn't an accident, especially defensively. I think it's very interesting that it's now what 10 games of sample size. They're at 9 games of sample size. You can also include 2 games against Tigres if you want. For the most part, across those 11 games, if you include those Champions Cup games, they've done an exceptional job of keeping chances low quality, not only just in actual like expected goals, but also like another underrated part is like the XG per shot. 'Cause yeah, they're allowing a lot of shots. So if you're looking at the shots chart, it might seem a bit high. In a game like this, for example, they allow 16 shots. It's a lot. You know, you look at something like that, you might feel a bit worried, but then you're like, oh, they only allowed 1.07 XG, including just 0.8, I think it was, from open play, which considering the Morgan double chance factors into that, like, yeah, that's a very good, good day at the office. Yet that's a credit to what they're doing. It's, yeah, okay, they sometimes it's, again, shots against possession, two stats that will always stand out, especially in modern soccer. Sometimes the idea can be you want high possession, you want high shots, but also, as we know, it's all in the quality. And I find it so interesting that this Whitecaps team has found a balance in the sense that they don't need the ball, they don't mind suffering shots, but that's because they're not giving up a lot of quality. And when they do have the ball, they turn it into quality. It can be a moment like that. Vite to Raposo to White, and it can be that through ball Gold played to White, which could have made it 2-0, absolutely stunning outside the book, outside the boot pass from Ryan Gold. I really continue to be impressed by the defense, and yeah, I think this attack, we're just seeing that when their defense gives them a chance, at the very least they're scoring a goal or two per game, and that's been enough to kind of strike this formula of 2-1 wins, 1-0 wins, 2-0 wins, even as we've seen. So no, I think this Whitecaps team has found a good balance between all their pieces now, and it just continues to be to tinker, right? I think you're looking at this group, it's figuring out who the center back is, but also that's by design. I think it's nice that there's a bit of a rotation that you can take Knut Vik out, who is so great, and you still have a pretty much perfect defensive performance bar the goal against. Wingbacks have been interchangeable. Raposo's played what, 400 minutes? He has 2 goals, 3 assists. Like, pretty darn good for a wingback, especially again, what did we say a few weeks ago? The Whitecaps needing depth scoring. He continues to provide that depth offense. The front three of sometimes it's been Ahmed. Fafapico hasn't even been healthy the past few weeks. They've been getting results. So him being back will be a big boost. Like, yeah, this Whitecaps really. I'm struggling to look at areas where I'd say there's question marks, let alone big ones. Like, of course, I think now the goals will be to improve on this, to tighten things up. I still think there's rooms for additions between the squad for sure, but I think I like the floor of where this team's at, 'cause I think that's what we've seen carry to the start, right? Like, I think this start is more on the floor than it is the ceiling. Like, you're not sitting here being like, man, it feels like the wheels are going to fall off at any second. It really feels like, all right, it's sustainable. They might lose a game, then they'll go win and they'll go win two again, and then they'll draw one, and then they'll win one. It's not like, man, I'm just they just you know, it just feels like it's so sustainable right now. which is key. So yeah, I really don't have too much to note on all of that. I guess maybe we should just dive in, because I know it was something we wrote about in our third sub thoughts. You specifically, Sam, expanded on it, and it is worth mentioning. Yohei Takaoka, I didn't know he made 8 saves, so actually it's interesting you pointed it out, because again, to the point about the shot quality, he didn't have to face it a lot, but yeah, that error on the goal, it's a fatal one. It really is, because this is a game that genuinely, I think the Whitecaps could have easily stolen a 1-0. Like we said, a 1-1 was fair, but like we mentioned, the Red Bulls, 16 shots, 1.07 XG, the quality just wasn't there on a whole lot of shots other than the Morgan ones early. They easily could have stolen this one and left home with the 1-0. So the fact that the goal they did allow wasn't a banger, it wasn't a well-worked shot, it's a cross into a very claimable area right through Takaoka's hands into the back post. I mean, Takaoka, what to make? He takes away with some of these incredible saves he makes, but then an error like that, it's one where that does hurt the Whitecaps' ability to get the win that they could have easily stolen in this one.
Yeah, so first I'm going to give Takaoka his flowers, because he made 2 great saves on Morgan in those early moments. Also, yes, a couple of those shots were low XG, but there were a couple like partially deflected ones where he had to do a good job managing the rebound, making sure it didn't pop out into space. You know, it was, in terms of shot stopping, a really nice performance from the Japanese keeper. I just, for me, and I don't know how this is fixable, Takaoka is just not confident rising high, putting his hands above his head and catching the ball. He seems absolutely allergic to doing that. We even saw a couple like routine plays in this match where he comes up to get a cross in the box and he waits and he does like the loaf of bread carry where he catches it in his chest. Like he waits until the ball comes right to his chest and then kind of wraps his arms around it. It's just very odd, and it doesn't inspire much confidence in those moments. And yeah, when you're not comfortable doing that, that cross gets whipped in. I mean, we saw the Red Bulls do it on a number of occasions. There was absolutely zero respect for the keeper's aerial ability. Every cross was just whipped in right on top of his head. And, you know, teams know about this, obviously, and they're doing what they can to put Vancouver in tricky situations. I actually think, given the fact that you don't have a keeper who comes up and claims that kind of stuff, they dealt with crosses and set pieces, corner stuff like that quite well this season. You know, if you've got your prototypical 6'5" aerial threat keeper, you almost don't have to work anything inside the 6-yard box. You just leave that for your keeper, right? But it's not the way the Whitecaps operate at all. It's something they've been able to, you know, to their credit, Takaoka and the whole defensive line, they've been able to play around it for the most part. I mean, what I said in the written stuff was, because they haven't really conceded many high quality chances, there just haven't been many of these moments for Takaoka to worry about. But when they do, those balls get whipped high in the area right on top of them, it is an absolute adventure. So yeah, I don't know if I have like an explicit answer. I don't think it's a problem like in the regular season, but I could just see this being something where we're in round 2 of the MLS Cup playoffs, and there's a moment that maybe comes back to haunt the Whitecaps. I don't know. I don't necessarily have anything more to add there. It's something to continue to monitor for sure.
Well, the scary part is the Red Bulls cross on the goal isn't a high sweeping ball towards the back post. This is a ball that was what, maybe chest height into the near post?
Truly should have been like a routine catch.
At the very least, and like, heck, even if you don't feel confident for catching for whatever reason, you think someone's going to barrel into you, that ball could have punched that straight out of bounds. I'm not a goalkeeper expert by any means. I've been dabbling in a bit of goalkeeping myself as of late. I feel like I see a ball like that, like, heck yeah, I'm punching that thing to oblivion. Like, that thing, yeah, that's the thing. I get it, you know, as a shorter keeper, you know, also the physical nature of MLS boxes. I get it if they're dropping whipped, curled balls right on the back post. You're backpedaling, you got a big striker on you. I get it, but like, the fact is, it's like you mentioned, yeah, some of these whip balls feel like they've been very preventable. But the biggest thing is that it's been decisiveness. It's like, it's not so much what, like him, it's not his size, it's not anything he's doing. It's like just the decision-making of, you see that ball coming in the box for Red Bulls, step out and go after it, you know, scream, punch it, be decisive. It just kind of felt like in his mind, he both caught it, punched it, and left it all at once. And that ends up in this like weird hands flailing at the ball. Ball goes through your hands right to the back post. Like, that's the thing sometimes as a goalkeeper, for better or for worse, you have to make decisions. And sometimes you get burned. You see it sometimes where it's a breakaway, keeper thinks you're going low left, you dive, you look like an idiot as the striker fakes the shot and then just walks it past you because you fell over. But you just, you made a decision, right? You didn't get caught in no man's land, sitting there. Or if you're coming off your line, and yeah, you end up looking like an idiot because you get chipped, but hey, at least you came off your line, right? Like, sometimes you just need to be decisive. And it feels like that's the kind of, if I want to pinpoint something like you mentioned, like what the issue's been for Takoka, I feel like it's his decision-making. Because again, it's the fact of, oh, you get thrown out, that he's a small goalkeeper. Again, I don't know how much to read into these things. I don't know how accurate they are. I go on Google, says Yohei Takaoka is taller than Maxime Crépeau, and I never seem to see an issue with Maxime Crépeau coming out and punching and, you know, getting after balls, catching. You saw it for Canada last month. I see it every time I watch for Portland. So again, I don't, you can't sit there and say, because I know that's thrown around sometimes, oh, he's a short goalkeeper. No, it's genuinely something when it comes to decision-making and mentality. And it's funny because he's so fearless when it comes to breakaways, for example. He's so good at breakaways. Like, that doesn't get talked about enough. Like, how many times this year has he just swept up breakaways with these big, dominant, sweeping saves, but then all of a sudden the ball comes to corners and it just, like, he forgets all that fundamental, the fearlessness of it all.
Well, again, I think it's the only thing on, like, the technical side is he just has no catching technique. So I think that's part of what leads to the indecision, is when you're not comfortable just coming up and claiming it, well, now you get stuck between, do I catch, do I punch, do I leave it? This is, you know, truly handing out free ideas here. And this might be stupid, but, you know, you got the BC Lions in town. Get the wide receiver coach in there for a training session. Seriously, though, because what are you taught in football? You're taught to high point that ball. You're taught to put your hands up, you know, in a, like, a catchable shape. And I've never seen Yohei come out and truly, like, high point the ball. It's always a waiting game where he gets to that spot and then he's waiting for the ball to come into him. And that's what leads to those indecisive moments. That leads to someone hitting you in the hip and you falling sideways, which we've seen a couple times. I think he just, you know, that's something that he needs to maybe go back in the lab and take a look at. Or, yeah, or just fully commit to, like, hey, I'm never going to be that guy to catch it. I'm just, I'm knuckling it away, or I'm leaving it. So it seems it's a combination of the mental thing. And I think a little bit of, you know, it's just ultimately that's not something he has in his skill set at the moment. So he either needs to improve that or just find a way to work around it.
Well, it's another Canadian keeper. I'll be giving them some love because, I mean, they're the ones I watch the most in MLS for reasons. Jonathan Sirwa, he's a bit taller than Takoka listed, but he's not the tallest guy either. Every time I watch from Montreal, he punches a lot. You don't have to catch either. Like, if you don't feel comfortable for whatever reason, I get it. Especially, like, sometimes there's that fear of, you go up, you catch, you get your hips cleaned out, you fall down and break your arm. There's always that fear. Sirwa does a good job. He's one of the best goalkeepers in MLS, and he's punching the ball a lot. He doesn't always have to be catching it. So that's also another solution. And if not, heck, there's been also some very good goalkeepers, like, especially for someone like Takaoka, who's got good reflexes. Stay on your line. Like, if you're not comfortable coming out and taking that risk, feels like as a defender, you're almost better off knowing that, okay, if the ball's being whipped there, I can stick my head in. Because, like, it's like that goal for Red Bulls. There was a bunch of players at the near post who easily could have cleared it, but they felt like, oh, goalie's coming out, he's going to catch it, Takoka's got this, and it goes through. And then they left looking, you know, they easily could have, I think Veselinovic was there, Anko could have booted that ball out, or someone else. Like, that's it. It's
you
just,
don't want to clatter into your own keeper, but if you're not worried about your keeper being there, then you just kind of have a license to clear that away with, you know, with force.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see how he adjusts, because, yeah, it's funny. He's been so good to start the year. I think you genuinely can't ignore the Whitecaps' hot start, not look at the role he's played in it, especially in some of their wins. He's made some huge saves, but also at the time, this is now a couple points dropped, and it's not fatal. Like, these are, you lose to RSL. That's one you probably want back, giving an interconf or a game in your conference against a rival you're probably going to be competing with for a playoff spot. Okay, that one hurts. This one doesn't hurt as much because it's an interconference game, right? You drop points, whatever. Red Bulls aren't going to be competing with you for a playoff spot, but you don't want those to add up, right? And especially that he's been in good form. You don't want, because like a mistake like this can tank a goalkeeper's confidence, right? And when you're doing so well, you don't want a mistake like this to tank his confidence either. So far, to his credit, he's done well to bounce back. Like that RSL game, he responded very well to it. And I'm sure he'll respond well from this, but definitely something to watch. Because as you know, teams are smart. And I'm thinking like, man, some of these guys I watch around the league, some of the ways they take corners, they just drop these whipped balls on the back post. We haven't really seen anyone do that yet. And I bet, for example, the one I think of immediately is Federico Bernardeschi for TFC. If they meet in a CanChamp final, for example, that's a worry, because Bernardeschi can whip these balls into the back post, and it's a strategy that TFC sometimes uses on corners. I imagine him and anyone else who has that capacity in his locker. Heck, it's funny. I think of, again, there's more players than MLS, but in CPL, for example, Tristan Borges is really good at that as well. Whitecaps Forge in a semifinal. You'd hate to, in a game you're doing well and you give up a goal like that, like Borges, like he does his Olympico, like he did last year to Carducci, another goalkeeper who, again, maybe it's a Whitecaps thing, another goalkeeper who struggled with those sorts of crosses into those dangerous areas. It could get burned. So definitely something to watch, not end of the world, say, for Takaoka, but something that could, like you mentioned, rear its ugly head at the wrong time, which you don't want.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I think we buried the lead here for long enough. I mean, we have to give some credit and a shout out to Brian White for setting the MLS regular season goal scoring record for the Vancouver Whitecaps, doing it in saucy kind of back heel fashion. Just great way he kind of opened up his body to deflect that into the goal. And, it was, I did this in my written stuff. It was truly prototypical Brian White, because it was a good match where he scored a goal and you feel like maybe he should have had two or three. I think that's as accurate a reflection of the Brian White experience as I can think. But at the same time, I also, sometimes I think we've been reasonably consistent in this camp on the show, where I think for all the stuff you see online at times about, oh, if we had a striker who could actually finish these chances, I think it's important to note that the reason Brian White has so many of these chances is because he works his absolute tail off the ball to get in those positions. Like the two other chances in the match that weren't the goal, first of all, he makes that run. Ryan Gold's ball, obviously tremendous, but that only works with a striker who is just waiting to make those runs. And then similarly, Ali Ahmed wins the ball and immediately looks for White, and White's there in that space. And, he's not able to get the shot off before it's blocked away. Brian probably thought he had a little more time there, and okay, you'd love to see him finish it. But again, his instincts, his work rate off the ball, those are the reason he's even getting those chances. So for as much annoyance there is that, okay, he doesn't convert every single one he sees, I think he also creates more than is there to be had in the first place. So I feel like at the very least those offset. It's hard to complain about Vancouver's most successful goal scorer in terms of the regular season in MLS history. So shout out to Brian doing it in front of friends and family as well. They panned over to his little section in the crowd, and that was super cool to see.
Yeah, and think about it, like the all-time Whitecaps MLS era goal scorer, top goal scorer, it's a player doesn't count as an international spot, someone who cost you $400K in jam.
No freaking penalties, like
zero penalties
on.
That's wild. Because even it's 50 goals in his career in MLS, none are a penalty.
Like how many Camilo penalties were there? A lot.
Freddie Montero is pretty good at penalties too. Lucas Cavallini, I know he's in the top 10. D- decent amount of penalties. Of course, Ryan Gauld, I think it's like fourth or fifth. He's put away a fair few spot kicks. Like Brian White, that's it. Imagine if he had penalties to inflate his total last year. He could have been pushing for the golden boot, right? Like that's Ryan Gauld scored like seven of them and White was five off the golden boot race. Like he gets a few of those penalties. He's right in the mix. And yeah, I think what's with Brian White, it's sometimes it's a thing that happens, I think, most with strikers. I tend to notice, I see this with a lot of strikers I watch and look at. Sometimes strikers tend to get judged for what they aren't and not so much what they are. I think it's just important to recognize what Brian White is as a player. And he's someone who is absolutely lethal with the one-time finish. That's what I've come to realize. I've started to jokingly say he reminds me a lot of a Bas Dost, the legend who used to only score while he's still playing. So I can't say used, but score his goals with his first touch. That's kind of Brian White. I think if you want a game to sum him up, think of LA Galaxy a few weeks ago. He missed a few absolute howlers of breakaways, but he scored a tough, tough header. Yet that's Brian White. It feels like whenever it's whipped into the box, one touch, he's the guy you want. Yet as soon as he gets the second, third, fourth touch running in on a breakaway, that's where it all just starts to happen too much. He's like, should I ship it? Should I go? And sometimes it comes off. Like he scored a really nice chip breakaway last year. So I can't say he's poor at breakaways, but you can just tell he never really seems comfortable. Like, you know, there's just some guys that get breakaways and you almost like, it's a metaphorical, like I take my hands off the controller because you know it's going in. So you already just start worrying about celebrating it. Brian White isn't always that guy. Like he's someone where he's on a breakaway. You're like ready to celebrate, but you're also ready to chase the rebound because you don't know what way it's going to go. But man, when it comes to one touch finishing, he's ruthless. And then, you know, what you see as well, like you can never forget, like you mentioned, he works his, you know, butt off every game, really. Just running, pressing, always being annoying, holding up the ball. He takes a beating every game from defenders and he's a team player. Like you got to love that. And, you know, the lead up to this record, a moment and in the record, you wouldn't think Brian White's chasing a record. You'd think like even the goal, the way he celebrated, of course it was against his former club. So he was never going to celebrate it much, but he easily could have let out a big grin or something. No, it looked like Brian White had just, you know, successfully cleared the ball off a corner. It was just like, all right, job done. I score goals, cool, on to the next. And it's often like that. And there's like this business-like approach and a team-first approach. And I think that has to be commended because in a Vanni Sartini system, you know, that's built around the collective, it's pretty cool that he has two attacking machines in Gauld and White, because that's what they've been, who are so selfless, right? Like it's a rarity in a world where guys who tend to put the ball in the net, it's all like, yeah, I score goals, I'm that guy. Like, yeah, like I think that's also pretty cool for White that he brings that personality, because I think it fits so well with what Vanni Sartini asked for him. So yeah, really for White, great to see what he's done. He's well deserving of this record. And yeah, curious to see what the Whitecaps can do with him going forward. And hey, if there's a way for them to get even more out of them, because imagine if they get, you know, the term we've thrown around, that third really fast guy that could fit both besides Gauld and White. Maybe he can take that person can take a little more of the breakaways, allow White to play a little deeper, get on the edge of, you know, more crosses. Maybe that's a way to get White scoring even more. But you know what? So far, so good. I think he's, what, four goals now in nine games? He's top 10 in MLS scoring. I know that much. I don't know. I think it's four or five. You can never be mad at that for, again, a striker who's not on a DP contract, which is, again, wild to say.
Yeah, the search for that young Fafa Pico continues. I mean, that's something else you should say in this match. And this can maybe kind of round out the discussion, because I don't know if there's a ton more to add here. But we have seen over the last couple of weeks that Fafa Pico is missed. I mean, I thought, like, in terms of tactical notes from the match, I thought Berhalter and Vite did a pretty darn good job. I thought Vite, I mean, I said this in written already, but just felt like there was a little more swagger and confidence there. He was getting involved physically, which I love to see. Like, even, you know, it took a couple fouls, but it's like, man, if you're going to like throw a shoulder in and let the other guy know you're there, I think like that's what you want to see from Vite. There can be times, there's matches where he just doesn't look engaged, especially if he's not getting a lot of the ball. So I liked what I was seeing from him in terms of off-ball work rate in this one. That's a good New York midfield, and those two young guys did a job. So I've shout out to them. Now, I guess the one thing, if you're looking back on this match and you're maybe a little bit disappointed, is that I don't really, Ahmed and Adekubi didn't really create a whole heck of a lot. You wonder about the who should be up front in that setup. Sam doesn't really, it worked a little bit against Seattle, but he doesn't really have the instincts, especially in like those quick transition moments to be an attacking player. I like him in possession and build up kind of with the match in front of him, but it just, I think also the way that the game, as you mentioned, got quite vertical at times. It's like, all right, well, that's not where Sam wants to be living, right? And then you have Ahmed further back, where if he was up front in those vertical moments, you probably like what he has to offer a little bit more. So it didn't quite go, I think, the way Vanni Sartini wanted that combination to go down the left-hand side. But again, we're being nitpicky in a road match. I don't think it's a huge deal at the end of the day. Nice to see Pico back. It was interesting in terms of, this is the third sub podcast, so we'll talk about substitutes a little bit. Vancouver very much kind of felt like with bringing on Parise and Jevane Brown that it was full, like we're playing for the single point mode. And then the red card happens, and now it's like, oh, well, Pico and Krylak, here you go. We're actually going to try to go for 3 points. So that was a bit funny because they got caught in between two minds there. But yeah, that kind of empties the notebook, I think, for me. I'm not gonna make a huge deal out of them, the substitution strategy or the Ahmed Adekubi situation. I mean, I think when Pico's back and ready to go, which hopefully he will be next week, that's one less thing they have to worry about.
Yeah, it's probably tough for Ahmed and Adekubi just in the sense that their best fit seems to be both as wing backs. And I think that'll be the ideal, one of the ideal 11s. Vanny goes to is Ahmed in what we can now call the Shopf role. So wild to think about. Also, Shopf was certainly missed in this game. I feel like
True, true. Yeah.
he could have enjoyed it because I think he had an illness, I think it was reported as.
That's
So.
what it was. Yeah. There was no news about it before the match, but I think he came down with something and so was kind of a last minute out of the 18 situation.
So that's it. Well, I think Ahmed in the Shopf role, Adekugbe playing in his more natural wing back position, Pico up front, and then in possession, it ends up being kind of Pico and Ahmed on either wing, Adekugbe in a bit of a free role. I think that's the ideal positions. So yeah, I think it's something that between the two, I think Ahmed should be further forward, but also Adekugbe showed good things further forward, and naturally, I think they'll both kind of drop deeper as guys return. So not too much to say there. Just if I'm going to empty the notebook on my end, let's just talk about the three midfielders. What I liked about Berhalter and Vite is that for a good game for Vite, you want to notice him, and you noticed him. He was there, he was involved, you saw him. Great. With Berhalter, you don't want to notice him because you're playing a number six, you're replacing Kubas. And I didn't.
Truly, if he hadn't taken those two free kicks, you might not have even known he was on the pitch.
So yeah, that's it, and that's a good thing. Like I didn't think until like after the game, I was like, oh yeah, Kubas was suspended. And like, yeah, Kubas could have helped, no doubt. But I wasn't sitting there like, oh, there's a huge Kubas gap hole. And I want to say that's impressive on Berhalter, because I don't know about you, Sam. It's the first time I really got to watch him. Edelman is an absolute machine on New York. That kid he's gonna be a problem in midfield. He was so good.
It's a really, really good midfield through the Red Bulls. I think everyone's like Morgan, Forsberg. Obviously, Forsberg was like, man, his touch on those passes is just ridiculous. So I was impressed by him. But yeah, I think the midfield, like the center of the midfield for the Red Bulls, is definitely, they're getting a lot of praise, but I feel like it's still underrated.
That's it. I'm like Edelman, Daniel Edelman, 21 years old, 44 caps for Red Bulls. Man, I was very impressed with what I saw. So shout out to him for that, and shout out to Berhalter for going toe to toe in that. Yeah, and
I
Vite
very
as
much
well.
wonder where Edelman will be playing in 3, 4 years. Be interesting.
That's it. It's like, I mean, hey, this is a Red Bulls team that's produced Tyler Adams before. I don't know. That's a big ask for an Edelman to, like, yeah, go play for a Bundesliga Premier League clubs, but hey, they have a history of moving on midfielders. But for Berhalter and Vite, two young midfielders in their own right, similar ages to Edelman, good showing in their ways. But I want to give a shout out as well to Ralph Parise, because I thought I was a bit surprised to see him thrown into this game of this magnitude, because I know Vanny has said, oh, they're taking him along slowly. He's figuring out the tactics, getting up to speed. So I was like, oh, okay, Ralph Preece. I know Kubas isn't on the bench, but Preece gets a good 30 against the Red Bulls midfield. I thought he was really good. Like, he was finding a lot of space. His possession plays, I mean, that's always been a big asset of his dating back to TFC, always something that's really impressed me. But he positionally seemed fine, never really was caught out. He was really good on the ball. Maybe there's some more minutes for Preece coming for, which could be huge, because A, you got to keep managing Kubas's, you know, minutes, because sometimes injuries flare up. You got to manage his yellow cards. He's, of course, got Copa America this summer. Preece could end up having a decent role to play, and it's nice to see that he was thrown in a game like this and did not look out of place.
This was the first, I don't know if I'm quite as high as you on Preece. However, I will say that this is the first match where I was kind of like, oh, I can see what Vanny and Axel saw here. Like, there's some moments where it's kind of like, he's still figuring it out. But I can see why Vanny and Axel are like, oh, this is a guy we think we could bring along and could be like a good player for us. I mean, say for example, the age of the timeline's a little different, but like Seb Berhalter wasn't getting any love in any minutes. He was kind of like supposedly a top prospect that never really developed. They brought him into Vancouver. They found the right role for him, and he's just slowly continued to get better and better. So I can see that being the Preece timeline, where it's not going to come together right away, but there's something here that the team likes. So I'm excited to see more, as you mentioned, with multiple competitions this summer, you know, CanChamp, Leagues Cup, international absences. We're going to see something out of him, and it'll be interesting to watch along.
Yeah, I mean, Preece, it's wild to think, because, yeah, he's only 21, but he came in with over 66 appearances. It's, in fact, nice, 69 appearances across Colorado and Toronto, first team level. Like, he comes in with a decent experience for his age, because, of course, Berhalter came in, I think he was 20 when he came in, but he'd only had 18 games with Austin and 9 games with Columbus under his belt. So after Mike Preece, is especially on the ball, like, Preece's always impressed me with when he was with Toronto and Colorado. In that aspect, it was always like off the ball, it's consistency. And I think that bodes well, because what did we see with Berhalter? Berhalter also had some pretty good skill on the ball. He's improved leaps and bounds defensively under the Andres Kubas training regimen.
Look at Pedro Vite, who was like a ball playing only number 10 and is now like a added value central midfielder. So, you know, Vanny's got this in the locker to take these young midfielders and improve their defensive work rate and consistency.
Well, so we'll need to find out who is behind this. Like, is it Vanny Sartini, or if it is the Andres Kubas training school, maybe add another couple $100K to his salary just to compensate for all these young midfielders he's just taken under his wing and turning into defensive freaks. And hey, hopefully you can do the same with like Jeevan Badwal and some of the other young kids coming through the academy. But no, I think that's something to keep an eye on for Preece. And yeah, like that depth between Preece and Berhalter, to know that, okay, if Kubas goes down for whatever reason, or if it's missing out, you can't have too much depth. And I know midfield was a bit of a question mark, but now between bringing in Preece for depth, not really an area of worry. Like, really, again, you're looking across that roster of areas to bolster if you're just going to be nitpicky after these first 9-10 games. Again, maybe another piece at wingback, but even then, Schopf's emergence there has kind of nullified the need. It's really just only for another body up front. And that's something where you have to imagine they're working for it. And hey, they did also add a body at wingback recently. I can't forget Giuseppe Bovalina. The Aussie with the very Italian name. But no, well, that really right now, the only area of concern on the roster is up front. You kind of feel it when Fafapika goes down, you know, recently, and you're like, okay, there's not that many options there. But other than that, like, quietly, the Whitecaps roster has come together nicely, and someone like Preece stepping up is nice to see them add to that midfield depth.
Okay, so last thing before we sort of move on to Austin preview. I just thought this was a good question. I saw it on the Whitecaps subreddit, which is sometimes completely unhinged, but sometimes there's some good commentary in there as well. When are we going to see someone other than Yohei Takaoka play in goal for the Vancouver Whitecaps? Because someone was saying, you know, is, are we running into the same thing as last year where Takaoka plays every single match and he runs out of energy by the end of the season? And I know there's breaks, there's League's Cup, there's all these other things where you can manage it over the course of the season, but I thought it was a good point. Can champs just around the corner. You know, it's been Bomer a lot of the time making the 18 in instead of Bendik. I just wonder when we see one of those guys for the first team.
My guess, if I'm going to put anything tangible, I think you see Isaac Bomer on Tuesday, May 7th in the first leg against Cavalry. Because I think what's worth noting is that the workload just hasn't been that bad. Like with the schedule starting early, the Whitecaps are yet to play a midweek game. It's just been every week. They even had the bye to start the year to kind of give them a break since Tigres. There hasn't really been a moment where you're like, all right, you're rotating guys for fatigue. And I think that's kind of been shown with how they've been able to manage guys' minutes and get guys like Adekugbe back. Like it hasn't been like there's this, you know, wild schedule overload. So for now, I'm not too worried about Takaoka, but yeah, can Champ will bring a couple of midweek games. They also have this random midweek game visit to Colorado, something to keep an eye on. Like I think, in fact, I could, looking at the schedule, I think Bomer could get both legs of the Cavalry tie, genuinely, because I'm looking, they play Austin this weekend, then they play Cavalry just 3 days later. May as well throw in, because it's also on the road, may as well throw in Bomer, keep Takaoka fresh. Then they head down to LA on that weekend. You keep Takaoka fresh for that. Boom, that's a win. Then they played midweek in Colorado 4 days later. I think you can throw Takaoka in that. Seattle away, like 3 days later, Takaoka in that. But after that stretch of 3 and 7, why not throw Bomer in at home against Cavalry May 21st? And hey, if he does well against those in those two ties, I know there's a couple more midweek games coming up. Like I think there's one against KC away in May. Like for example, you could throw Takaoka and that one and Bomer at home a few days later to Colorado. And then of course with Leagues Cup and all, and as the Whitecaps go deeper in Canadian Championship, maybe you see Bomer eased in. But that's my guess. I think based on that schedule, Canadian Championship makes a lot of sense. And I'd be surprised, and really, it would be interesting to see what the Canadian situation ends up being, but that helps the Whitecaps, for example. Like, if they really want to, their main lineup has been the two, they've mostly just gone two Canadians at a time. It's usually one of Ahmed, or it's usually Ahmed and one of Adekugbe Raposo. They could also just go Bomer and then have the two Canadians be wingbacks and go for a front three of White, Gold, Pico if they want. So Bomer could have had a bit of flexibility in that regard too.
Okay, last thing before we move on to Austin. Do we need to talk about the Wrexham friendly at all? It's not in the notes here. I kind of want to completely ignore it, but I feel like we have to say at least something about it.
Cool?
Yeah, like honestly, not so cool when it comes to the ticket prices, well, but in theory a cool idea. I like the idea of anything that gets more eyeballs on the Vancouver Whitecaps in this market. Kind of like the Messi discussion we had a while ago. While I maybe object to some of the stuff around it, ultimately, if 100, 1,000, 5,000 new people are exposed to Vancouver Whitecaps soccer and you know, half of those people then say, hey, I might come back and check out another match, I think that's a good thing. I can nitpick all the specifics till the cows come home, but I think in principle, I'm a fan of anything that brings more attention and more interest to this team and just kind of soccer in this market in general.
Yeah, that's it. Honestly, if I'm going to go from a more serious standpoint, I think it's great. I'd even endeavor to say, like, in isolation, I think when you consider all the factors, like when I heard about it at first, the day before, I was like, this is great. Like, look, at the end of the day, it's a friendly. Yeah, it's a League One team, or a League Two team about to be a League One team, Wrexham's promotion. You can throw this could be a great guy's chance for a bunch of your guys to get minutes, right? Maybe a Jeevan Badwal 30-minute cameo, you know, new, fresh goalkeeper, your rest Takaoka. There's benefit from the Whitecaps perspective, but forget all that. We won't go in the nitty-gritty. Just from a marketing standpoint, you're playing a club that, for better or for worse, is getting talked about a lot right now. And you know, obviously the Ryan Reynolds and, you know, Rob McElhenney story of investing in the English pyramid and going through the rungs. You can argue all you want about the money that they've brought in, if it gives them a competitive edge. Look, it's a story people are following. I find myself checking out like, all right, how are Wrexham doing? I know some people check it out of hate. Some people check it out because they like the club. What? People are checking it out. It's the same thing with Messi in Miami and Ronaldo at Al Nassr. Like, people are interested in these sorts of stories for a reason or not. So I'm like, look, it's for the most part, there's been a lot of overwhelmingly positive support around the Wrexham story. One of the owners is from Vancouver. Why not? Like you mentioned, if you tap into a few markets, I know, but I hate the pricing. I think the pricing is ridiculous, if I'm going to be completely frank. $130 tickets to go watch that game. And I say that because in 2015, Crystal Palace came through and there were some pretty good players on that Crystal Palace team. That game was $50 tickets, $40 tickets to go see a Premier League side with some top talent.
So to be clear, I know that this doesn't matter to the person who's going to go watch the match, but I think part of this is that this is not an event run by the Vancouver Whitecaps. This is an event run at BC Place by this marketing agency or whoever is sort of involved with Wrexham that has invited the Whitecaps to play. So it's sort of, it's not a Vancouver Whitecaps FC operation. And hence the club, the host club, is not the one setting the ticket prices in this scenario, which is, you know, they're looking to hit certain targets, this marketing group, and it really has nothing to do with what serves Vancouver Whitecaps fans, which is obviously, again, not, doesn't solve the problem, but just at least, you know, explains what's going on.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to point that out. So I'm happy that you did, because yeah, that's it. I think it's ridiculous on the firm, but also it shows, like, at the end of the day, it is a money grab perspective from Wrexham. But that's, you know, that's a reason why teams from Europe do North American tours. For them, it's a marketing or it's a money grab. But from the Whitecaps perspective, this is it is a win in the sense that they're playing against a club that people know, that will get more eyeballs. And that itself is a victory. But yeah, I agree. The pricing is ridiculous. It's so dumb. It's such an like American model of, okay, yeah, you can get 50,000 sold out paying $20 a ticket, or you can get 20,000 paying 120 a ticket, you make more money. Hate that. I get it's the profit, it's the American way. I know they do it the US national teams, which has been a huge controversy because you lead to these situations where US will play home games now and there's like 10,000 people in a 40,000 seat stadium, but they're making just as much money if it was sold out. That just doesn't look good. That doesn't grow the game. That doesn't, and you know, that's the thing with soccer in this country. It needs growth. It's not at a point where it's like NFL, where it's almost like part of the culture that the Super Bowl tickets are $6,000. Like that, I never understand. Like, why is it celebrated that, ooh, to go to the Super Bowl, it cost me a freaking mortgage to go watch, you know, a game of football every year. Like, that's not a good thing. In the Champions League, you can go watch Champions League final for €200. And even that, like, fans protest over that, as they should. Like, in the end of the day, there's no reason why you have to be jacking up these prices, especially when you're in a position where you're trying to grow the game. So look, I could argue with the prices all day long, and I feel for the fans in this, especially the Whitecaps fans who wanted to tuck into a friendly like this, because the way that it's marketed, it's really like way too novelty. It's really targeting people that just know Wrexham, which is, again, not a bad thing from the Whitecaps perspective, but also unfair to the fans who have been putting in the graft and showing up to games and supporting the team. But at the same time, like you mentioned, yeah, it's important to note it's not the Whitecaps, because that hasn't been their strategy. For example, playoffs last year, they easily could have been like, oh, playoffs, let's jack it up, $100 tickets. No, it was, we want to sell out we want to start opening the upper bowl, $30 tickets. And they've been doing that for the most part, even the Miami game, right? The famed Miami game, they easily could have been gouging. You know, there's been some clubs as well around that have been accused of doing that. No, the Whitecaps were like, look, if you want to come to a Miami game for cheap, buy this 4-game pack and come to a few other of our games, or buy a season ticket. But it's been more the resellers who've been trying to gouge the market. And we don't have time to talk about the resellers. We've already gone long enough on the Wrexham story. So it shows that, yeah, really, it's unfortunate that this group is putting a bit of a stain on this friendly. And hey, maybe they'll correct things when they realize the sales are a bit slow, but I wouldn't hold my breath.
Yeah, well, at the very least, it'll be interesting when the match occurs. So, yeah, we'll check back in with you when we're a little closer to that. All right, on to Austin this
Let's say, Sam,
upcoming
you made a mistake. Open
weekend.
up that can of worms about tickets
Yeah, I
and
mean, no, like it's one of those things
no,
where again, I want to talk about it, but at the same time, I feel like, yeah, I don't want to, give too much shine to just like an easy spotlight, right? We're here to discuss the footy week in, week out. And I suspect the crowd listening to this podcast is not the crowd who's like over the moon about a Wrexham friendly. I'm sure they're interested, but I don't know if that's like really what gets them going. So anyways, Austin FC this weekend. This is a team that the last couple seasons has been known as like the XG unsustainability goats, maybe the precursor to St. Louis last season, right? Where they just win in ways that doesn't seem like it's going to last, and where often they kind of, either crash out late in the season or crash out in the playoffs. They've kind of done the same thing this year. Like their expected goal difference is insane. It's negative 8.5 XG, but their actual goal difference is plus one. So there's your 9.5 overperformance right off the bat. Now, that being said, this is a team that's won four of their last five matches, and they just rattled off two big wins, 2-0 over the LA Galaxy last weekend, and then 1-0 over Houston the weekend before. Houston, who was in really good form coming into that. So, this Austin team's doing something right for sure. I give a shout out to Tom Bogert again, who does great week to week content, and he was chatting about it. And these last two matches, they've played a lot more pragmatic, which is like not the Austin FC way traditionally. It used to be like high possession, high up the pitch, and they would just leave themselves exposed when it broke down. I think they only held something like 33% of the possession against Houston, so they just went like full pragmatism bunker and just we'll take our chances when we get it. And they didn't, it wasn't that extreme against the Galaxy, but obviously we know that you have to respect what the Galaxy can do in space on the counter. And Austin definitely did that. But they created enough chances. They converted when they had the opportunity, and they came away with a hard fought win. So this is a team that's, I still probably don't have faith for them to be anything more than like a lower rung of the playoff team, but there's something dangerous there. Obviously, Diego Rubio coming over, longtime MLS striker, was with Colorado for a while. I don't know if they've had someone quite like Rubio up front. I mean, they had Maxi Arruti there and some different, striker
Yeah, I see
type.
Zardes back in the day.
Right, but this is just like your pure sort of like in the box number nine, right? So I feel like that's been a good fit. Driussi, putting in more work defensively, it maybe not this hasn't had that like take over the game mode engaged just yet, but it feels like if he's able to do that, maybe Austin can even hit a bit of a different level. Brad Stuver been really good in goal. So there are some things to really like about this Austin team. I think ultimately, still, you look at the back line, you look at central midfield at times, and you sort of wonder, how is that going to hold up over the course of a full MLS season? But this should be like it's a sneaky good matchup. I think it's going to, at the very least, be an entertaining one because Austin FC, they do have some weapons in that front four that can certainly cause some problems. And Vancouver coming in with some pretty good form of their own.
Yeah, I have to, I guess, issue a bit of an apology to Austin because I know a few weeks ago in last or around MLS in five, I didn't give him the most glowing review. And look, I think
I don't think we gave them a very glowing review in our preseason preview. Like, I'm not even sure they got mentioned as like a possible contender for a playoff spot.
well, that's what I mean. So, like, I'll give them their due in the sense that some of these teams, man, there's like they love to play again and. I mean, heck, we knew it firsthand. We see it when the Whitecaps, hey, they had some years where they had some darn unsustainable numbers, but they made it work. There's always a few each year that Just they do it. So I mean, no, shout out to Austin though, in the sense they've turned it around, back to back wins over Houston and LA, two teams we've been quite high on. Certainly sends a message, but I think it also is a credit to to Josh Wolf. I think he's still around on the bench. He is, because he's adjusted, like you mentioned. I don't know if this was because this was two tough matches, or this was just maybe something he kind of realized after their how things had gone. Like, what I find interesting is Austin's averaging 52% possession on the year. They're a team that wants to hold the ball. They want to play a bit more of a high-flowing play, way of playing. And I looked through their possession to start the year, 52% against Minnesota in a loss, 43 against Seattle. That's typical. Seattle holds a lot of the ball, 41 against St. Louis, 54 against Philadelphia, 57 against Orlando, 67 in a win over Dallas, 61 against San Jose in a win, and then 62 in a loss to St. Louis. They held a lot of the ball, but then the last two games, 33% against Houston, 41% against the LA Galaxy, yet 1.5 XG allowed against a very good Houston attack, and their Picasso really of the season, 0.6 expected goals against the LA Galaxy. The Whitecaps allowed, what, almost three in their matchup a few weeks ago. And the Whitecaps have been a legitimately good defensive team. Like, that's not easy. So I think that's a big credit to us. Josh Wolf has found a bit of a formula that works. I think it helps that he has some stability at center back now, finally, because that was a huge issue last year. They've been going with Brendan Hines-Ike, the former DC United defender. I think he also spent some time abroad. And Julio Cascante, that was a center back duo last game. There's no more Alex Rings having to play center back. And man, remember, what was that guy? It was Tarek last year, who had that absolutely disastrous game against the Haitian side in Champions Cup, where he scored like catastrophic own goal and had a howler. There's no more like Amro Tarek disaster classes. They've got a bit more stability at the back. John Gallagher at right back is always someone solid whenever I watch Austin. Danny Pereira and Alex Rings, a solid pivot. Like, there's structure there in this team defensively that I think they lacked at times last year, and they showed it with this recent approach. And I'd expect them to keep this up, of course, against the Whitecaps. The Whitecaps, in their eyes, will be a top team, a match where they, and again, the Whitecaps, as we mentioned, haven't really showed sustainably that they can break down a low block. So I'd expect Austin to play in a low block. And that'll suit them. And then, as you mentioned, they've got difference makers in the attack. Driussi, such a dangerous player. He's a number 10, but he reminds me a lot of Evander in the sense that he's more of a shoot first number 10, but then he's not really Evander, because Evander is the king of the long speculative shot, whereas Driussi is the like drift into the box and then score from weirdly tight angles kind of guy. Just like he's more of a second striker profile. You got Ragone, you got O'Brien, very dangerous pieces. And I think I like the Rubio shout, because with guys before like Zardes and some of the other options they've had at the nine, those are guys who like to stretch the field out, play a bit more vertical. I think someone like Rubio, he's a bit more of a target. You saw with Colorado, and I think that gives something for a Driussi, an O'Brien, a Ragone to play off of. So that's obviously been a bit of a nice mix there. So yeah, no, this Austin team on paper is solid. And I think if they can keep up what they showed in the last two games, I think they can fix the unsustainability problem that's killed them with their underlying numbers and really make a push in the West. So credit for them for some of those moves and how they've been able to adjust.
Yeah, just to add a couple more things, like contextualizing that 0.6 XG performance, they've only had three matches this season where they've conceded less than 1.5 expected goals against. And only one match, I think that's the only match where they've allowed less than one, or maybe there have been two. But anyways, it's, those high quality defensive performances have been few and far between this season. But you made a good point. They have found a little bit more stability at the back. You talked about Hines-Ike. I mean, Matt Hedges was someone they added as a little bit of depth.
Good show.
Also, Guilherme Biro, who they brought in from Brazil, was playing in Serie B, but he's been like a match-in, match-out starter for them at fullback and really impressive so far. John Gallagher at that other fullback spot. Like, it's not a bad defensive unit. I think there is some reason to think that they can start to level things out, especially if it's not like they have to play counter attacking, you know, low block football all the time. I think the problem with Austin was just in the past, they refused to be tactically flexible. It was like, we're gonna live by the sword. We're going to die by the sword. It's kind of like old school San Jose, right? Where they only played one way. And if it didn't work, they'd get four scored on them. It feels like Austin's finally starting to realize that they have to be a little bit more flexible. And so I think that's going to put less pressure on the back line, less pressure on Stuver. I'm very curious to see how they line up against Vancouver. Like, do you think, is Vancouver going to get the respectful, the pragmatic approach from Austin, or is Austin going to come up here and try to dictate? Because, I mean, they might be able to. Vancouver's not necessarily a team that loves holding a ton of the ball. I'm curious how these two teams are really going to match up against one another. I guess the final thing to note is just that while we've been saying some nice things about this Austin team, it is also like one of the older teams in the league. You look at their lineup against Houston, average age of 29.8. So it's like, for by MLS standards, that is, you know, maybe if you're like a mid-table championship side, that's a standard squad age. But even so, you've usually got a couple of youngsters in there. So yeah, they are pushing it a little bit in terms of veterans.
Yeah, I like how we're like, we're being too nice to Austin. Let's just throw something at them. They're too old.
Well, that is, for MLS standards, that's an average age of almost 30 for a starting lineup is a real outlier.
Oh, no, it's definitely something where it is a bit of an older lineup. You see guys like Hedges, Zardes, involved Rubio, like it's Ring as well. Like, it's not an unreasonable point. But I guess one last guy I do want to shout out. But before I do, to your point, to answer your question, I would be surprised if they're anything but pragmatic, because A, it's what's worked for them. B, I expect a lot of teams to be pragmatic, and they should, against the Whitecaps, until the Whitecaps prove that they can can hurt teams in that way. Cause there's a reason why Seattle at home, a Seattle team that averages 55 possession, they tried to park the bus, but they tried to sit back at home against the Whitecaps. Teams are trying to sit back at home. The Red Bulls didn't, because they're a kamikaze team that just likes to live on the edge. But that's the Red Bulls. But I think more and more teams are going to want to sit back against Vancouver, because the reality is, when you let Vancouver sit back and hit you on the counter, it can be a tough day for you. But if you dare the Whitecaps to break you down, they haven't consistently proven that, okay, they can break these low blocks. Like, how many times last year was Whitecaps had chances, possession, but it was like, oh, they just couldn't break down the low block. Or when they were trailing late in the game and a team parked the bus, you just may as well have just turned off the TV, because you weren't gonna get any of those late chances. That's one. If I'm gonna have one question of their attack, that's been the big one for me so far. So I expect Austin to sit a little deeper, and it's gonna be an important challenge for the Whitecaps to prove that, okay, we have ideas that can. I can break down that low defensive block. But last point, I just wanted to give a shout on. I know you mentioned him. I don't know if you threw him in that list of guys you're throwing out. Brad Stuver, he also needs his flowers, because he is a very good goalkeeper. Right now, he's sitting with over 4 post shot expected goals through 9 games, which is just absurd. He's standing on his head, as you wrote on his notes here.
I'm reasonably confident that is far and away the best goalkeeping performance in terms of that metric in MLS so far this season. I was looking at this a couple weeks ago. Something may have changed since then, but I doubt it. Or is there someone who's blowing it away even more?
This is where you see you assumed wrong, because John McCarthy of the
LA
Galaxy,
right, that's right,
has 4.7 post shot expected goals, which is just ridiculous. Yeah. And also Alex Bono, of all people, with DC United, is right behind Stuver with 4.1. Stuver has 4.2.
Yeah, come on, I'm at it. Shout out to the goalkeepers, actually. There have been a number of really good performances this early season.
Well, that's it. The top 5 guys are all American dudes, and 4 of them are over the age of 30. So shout out to the MLS journeyman. It's been a year for the MLS journeyman goalkeeper. The John McCarthys, the Brad Stuvers of the world. But no, Brad Stuver, he's a very good goalkeeper. Last year as well, despite Austin's struggles, he had 2 post shot expected goals, so he was above average. You never turn your nose up at that from a goalkeeper. 22, he had 4. Like, he's consistently doing this. This isn't a fluke. This isn't luck. And that's something to watch, that if Austin sits back, man, if you get through that defensive block, you still got to get through Stuver. So someone to keep an eye on who could really steal a game like this, open it up, and something to watch out for.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, without any further delay, we want to do a little starting lineup preview prediction for Austin FC.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's dive in quickly, I guess, because we ended up going deep in the weeds on the XG talk. But no, I think I'm going to roll through. I don't expect many changes. Takoka, expect staying goal with potentially an eye on Bomer in midweek. Back three. That's a tough one. I think Utvik slots back in. I know the Whitecaps back there didn't make a mistake, but the fact that they didn't make a mistake in the clean sheet before and Utvik got taken out, I think Vanny's going to keep rotating that group. It'll also depend on training. I just want to say a very interesting note provided by Paul Dolan and Blake Price on the broadcast listening in the Red Bulls game. They noted that Ranko Veselinovic was actually about to come out of the lineup for this Red Bulls game, but then he was so good in training because I guess he felt that his spot was at threat for the middle of the back three, that he was very good in training and won his spot back. But I found that interesting because it shows that Vanni Sartini is potentially looking at a way to rest Veselinovic, stoke a little fire of competition, whatever. It works. Ranko then also had a very good game, but keep an eye on that. I don't think it'll happen this week because I imagine Ranko will go Ranko Rambo mode if you want to pick something. So I'll go Ranko in the middle, Utvik. I'd say Laborda, or not Laborda. I think Laborda drops out. I think Blackman stays in. Just Laborda did have a few more, uncharacteristic mistakes from last year kind of cropped up in this Red Bulls game. Blackman was very solid. I think for the midfield four, I think Atakugbe starts again, keep getting him up to fitness. Ahmed, Vite, Kubas. I think you see that four for the first time. I think this is the one that makes sense. And then you can throw in your Berhalters, your Prisos against Cavalry in midweek, a Raposo start 100% as well. And then up front, I think you go Gold, White, and I think Pico starts, although if he doesn't, slot Ahmed up front, then a Raposo slots in.
Just to confirm, that was both Sam and Ali as your wide players in the midfield, right?
Yeah, with Ahmed in the shop for all.
Yeah, I don't think I have a single note or a single disagreement. Just watching Pico's health. I thought that for Laborda, it was maybe a bit of a regression to some of the stuff we saw last year. It's just, a little out of structure at times. Still a good performance, and Laborda's great in those 1v1 situations, and he handled them really well. I think if this is like a baseline performance for Matias, then we're doing good.
Well, I'd say he was good. He was very good, even, you could say. There were a few moments. I think, again, I don't blame him because I think it's just the fact that the Red Bulls were so helter-skelter that there were just times where Laborda was almost like,
they invited the chaos. And I think, he gets kind of excited in those moments.
He's a willing combatant. And, Red Bull's like, hell yeah. And Laborda's like, yeah. And then Vanny's like, no. That's kind of the assessment. So I don't blame Laborda. I think that's worth noting.
No, totally. So I agree there. I think Utvik back in the fold. I will just say one of my bold preseason predictions was that Ranko Veselinovic would not be in the starting lineup by the end of the season. So if they're flirting with this at training, I think it would just be interesting to see at the very least. Obviously, with midweek stuff coming up, they're obviously going to have to look at creativity rotating through that back line one way or another. So yeah, in terms of the lineup itself, no notes for me. I think they're going to run the same thing you suggested. In terms of result, Alex, what do we think? Is this Whitecaps win all the way, or is there any possibility for a banana peel here after a good road result last weekend?
Well, how did we do in the Red Bulls game?
I went 2-1 win for the Whitecaps, which honestly I don't feel that bad about. I just, we didn't get that second goal we needed, but
I mean, I think I went draw. No, I just want to know.
I'm reasonably confident. Yeah.
Okay. So I think this one, I see a 1-0 win. Bold, but I think this can be a low event game. I think Austin will want to muck things up. The big ask to keep Driussen company off the board, but Whitecaps defense is in good form. I think they find a way to claw one at home, and they continue their push up the Western Conference ahead of, big Canadian championship road games and some other tough road games, of course, before their return home for the famed Miami match. So I think a 1-0 win is in the cards for this one.
I'm going to go win, but I'm thinking score line. I'm going to say that after 2 weeks of high-quality defensive play, things break open at the back for Austin, and this ends up being a 3-1 win for the Whitecaps. But I think kind of going in a similar vein to what you were picking at, this might be like 1-0, 1-1 in the 75th minute. And then, you know, things break kind of like the Galaxy did to the Whitecaps. Things break wide open at the end. So I think it'll be competitive. I think it'll be entertaining. I think maybe just, you know, if Austin starts to chase the game at some point, then Vancouver will be able to get them in a world of trouble. So it'll be interesting. We'll see how it goes. But I think, yeah, both of us looking for the Whitecaps to, you know, reestablish the home form has been mixed to this point in the season. So this is another opportunity to build some confidence at BC Place in front of what sounds like, I think this is one of like the messy pack games, is it not? Because I think you know, shout out to Har.
Oh, I think she
was reporting something like the club's expecting in the range of 30K in attendance. So I think that can only be explained by a messy pack type situation.
Yeah, I guess no. And plus, it's the anniversary match, so make sure to remember that. I think if you're going to the game, make sure to show up early because it sounds like there'll be some festivities. It's 50th anniversary game, probably some pregame stuff. This is a good bet they'll be wearing the blue kit this game instead of the white kit. So if there's any odds on that anywhere, if anyone's foolish to put that out, you can put money on that. Yeah, no, it's a big game, and yeah, looking at the pack, it was Charlotte in the home opener. Of course, they got 30K for that one. It's this one against Austin, 50th anniversary game. And then it's in the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 weeks, Miami, the Messi visit. And the fourth one, which this will be interesting, especially because, you know, they're about to sign a pretty darn good striker. It's August 24th against LAFC. I know a lot of people will be there to watch the playoff rematch, to watch the Whitecaps, watch Olivier Giroud and Hugo Lloris. I have a few French friends who will be who have admitted that's a reason for a visit. So those are the four in the pack. So yeah, going to be quite the crowd for the Whitecaps. And who knows, with the sunny Saturday, maybe the walk-ups end up being decent and they push higher up as well.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Should be a great environment. Yeah, can't wait to be there, and should be, yeah, a bit of a busier weekend in BC in terms of footy all around. Okay, we're going to run around MLS in five-ish minutes here. What happened this past weekend? What we can expect this upcoming weekend? I mean, for me, Alex, most of the news is on the Western Conference side. LAFC with another win over Portland. Portland seems to be playing well, but they just can't get results at the moment. That's tough. You know, shout out to some.
Well, they
of
can't
our
defend. That's the big issue. Like, there's some ridiculous stat where it was like,
are we facing the reality that like the McGraw, Miller, Kripo, you know, Canadian triangle maybe just ain't getting it done?
Well, I'll say it's bad timing for Kamal Miller because Moise Bombido has been playing out his skin for Colorado. He scored another goal this weekend.
Yeah.
He's right footed, so that's not even in competition. But Derek Cornelius, just want to say shout out to former Whitecap Derek Cornelius. He plays a cup game on Wednesday, a cup final, so he can win another piece of silverware. But he, with his very strong start to the season, 2 goals in 6 games, excellent defensive play. Like Sam, I almost, like when I was looking at his Y scout, he's averaging over, I think it's something like 75% of his aerial wins right now and over 80% of his defensive duels and 7 interceptions per game, 13 recoveries per game or something ridiculous like that right now. Ajax and Feyenoord are supposedly interested in him. So all of a sudden, a Bombido Cornelius pair, might that end up happening in June? Kamal Miller is going to have to battle to see, especially with Portland leaking goals. And it's not even on Maxime Crepeau. He actually had a really good game against LAFC. I think it was like 9 saves and it was like over 2 expected shots on target, like XG on target. Like he wasn't even that
this
bad
is,
in that
that's
game.
Prototypical Max. Max's best performances are always like when he gets shelled with shots in a 3-2 loss. That's just kind of the way it goes.
That's it. Or as we saw last year, he'll get shelled, but then he'll win a 1-0 shutout away to Seattle in the playoffs. That's also what Max Krepos can get you. So yeah, hey, something to watch with the Canadian backline, because I'll have to see if I can find the stats about Portland, but it was something ridiculous about the amount of times they've allowed 2 goals against, but I have to find that one. I'll see if I can
okay,
get it
well,
before the end of
we'll,
the segment.
we'll stand by here. I mean, so other Western Conference teams, Sounders lose again, red card again. Now the red card has, as of today, been rescinded. So Stephen Fry at least is off the hook in that sense. But man, it's just, things are dark down in Seattle right now. I don't even know what to say about it. And then Real Salt Lake with the Galaxy loss to the aforementioned Austin, they are top of the table in the Western Conference. Chicho Arango continuing to lead this team and playing really, really well. And you know, they just that front group they have with Luna, just a lot of really, really good stuff going on there. And yeah, a team that always kind of seems aligned with the Whitecaps in terms of trajectory. Like, they both let go of coaches at the same time. They had that whole like home away from home thing. And now both teams kind of surging up near the top of the table. So those are my Western Conference notes, Alex.
Yeah, RSL and my money, just, they seem to be one of the I think they really have stood out to me as the favorites, I think, right now in the West. I don't know if it's bold, but again, like, Galaxy kind of, you kind of see flip on its head, where when the Galaxy doesn't score, they allow goals. LAFC has been inconsistent, although LAFC is probably the other favorite right now with RSL. Seattle just can't win. you got other teams all have flaws. RSL impressed me, so continue to keep an eye on them. I did find the Portland stat, and this is hilarious. They've apparently, this one's per Chris Reifer. He's a Portland journalist out there. He says, with the loss, 3-2 loss, the Timbers are the first team in MLS history to score multiple goals, so 2 or more goals, in 5 straight games without a single win. That is, they've scored over 10 goals across a 5-game stretch and they have 0 wins. Like, that really, it's Phil Neville ball right now in Portland. It's fun, it's goals, and it's not winning. So shout out to the Timbers. And it's, again, tough for the Canadian back line down there, that they've been the one to eat that. Because, yeah, I don't know, like, it's hard to say if that's exactly been their fault, because it was like the Whitecaps game against Timbers. Like, yeah, Zach McGraw struggled in particular, but Kamal Miller wasn't terrible. Maxime Crepeau is fine, but maybe it's a mix of a bit of column A, a bit of column B, and that Canadian guy is certainly not without fault, but also a bit of team defense hasn't always been there for Portland. But yeah, other than that, the Sounders, it's funny. I wonder what's going to break first. Do they bite and get this slump off their backs that they've been clearly unlucky in during with red cards? They got another one this weekend with Stephen Fry, etc. Or do they bite and make a tough decision? Like, of course, the window's closed now, but do they trade a guy? Do they sell a guy? Do they fire Brian Schmetzer? As impossible as that may sound, I'm very curious to see where it's been at, because they haven't really had a road bump like this. Like, because even in 22, when they won the Champions League, as it was at the time, and then they missed the playoffs, that was understandable. João Paulo was hurt. Like, they just, you know, it was the Champions League hangover. You're allowed those. Teams in MLS have them. Right now, there's no reason why they should be having such a big hangover. It's not like they have a championship hangover, a title hangover, wild injuries like João Paulo's back. Like, I'm just curious to see what goes first there and in Seattle, because it feels like a domino is about to fall.
Yeah, it feels like something has to change. And I just don't, yeah, they're not a team positioned to make radical changes, right? Like, it's everything about their stancing is kind of just adding to what was a successful formula, and that doesn't seem to have worked. So it's a weird one. At the opposite end of the spectrum, Alex, TFC back-to-back wins, now, you know, did beat up on the New England Revolution again, but then this past weekend, you know, I think that was a more impressive result, right? Getting the victory over Orlando. Obviously, Orlando, it's been a really messy start to the year for them. Definitely not what they would have hoped for right off the bat. I mean, still, I think this TFC team, there's some pretty obvious flaws and some pretty, you know, obvious challenges they're going to face in the long term. But I think huge credit to Herdman and his group for what they've been able to get out of this team so far in the season. Prince Owusu all of a sudden seems to be finding his shooting boots and playing well. And yeah, I mean, just nice to see the Canadian teams doing well. Vanni Sartini talks about this, but you know, we want, he would say, we want to be the best team in Canada with the other two teams playing really well. You know, don't want to be the best team in Canada by default. And yeah, TFC, I mean, you look at it in comparison to the Whitecaps, right? I mean, it's 1.6 points per game right now from TFC. It's, what is it? It's 1.89 points per game from the Whitecaps. So, you know, the TFC is not super far behind. Again, two wins over New England, who has been horrific, is something to keep in mind. But nonetheless, I think a lot of credit has to go to what they've been doing over there to start the season.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, without even diving in any of their tactics, is just like they have so much more dog this year. And I think that, again, it's something so simple. But again, with TFC last year, talent wasn't the issue. So it was like that was the big question heading into 2023. I remember writing about it in one of my previews. I was like, TFC on paper is a good team. Just the big concern I had at the time was depth, and that ended up being a huge problem. They ended up, you know, injuries killed them, etc. And it's, you know, this year that was kind of the same thing, but they still have a good roster. I think it's an old roster, yes, and depth is a concern, yes, but it's a good roster. And when you add in the buy-in, how tactically solid they've mostly been, other than like the Vancouver drubbing and that stretch where they kind of got stretched out for a few games by KC and otherwise, and you know, the games were way too wide open. They kind of went away from their structure. But man, when they're at their best, like they were kind of were in this Orlando game, like there's just dog in this team. Like they went down 1-0 away. That TFC team last year, no chance they're even getting a draw, right? But now they go out and turn it into a win. The mentality is really there for Herdman, but that's not a surprise. That's what John Herdman brings to groups. It can be for better, for worse. Of course, his comments, you know, got him in a bit of hot water among fans after the Simcoe County Rovers game. You know, they went 5-0. He said, after all, we were disappointed. We wanted to break our goal scoring record. I know those comments rubbed some people the wrong way, honestly, myself included. But also, that on the flip side, the mentality is shown in moments like this where they just have that dog, that never quit attitude that just wasn't there last year and really over the last 3 years for the club. And look, sometimes in soccer, it's so simple, but sometimes something like that goes a long way, especially when your roster is pretty decent. As you see, when you don't have that mentality, a good roster can all of a sudden become a wooden spoon one. And that switch can also be flipped the other way when put in the right circumstances.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Well, again, we'll see how that develops as the season goes on, and we'll see if TFC and the Vancouver Whitecaps are destined for Canadian championship face-off at some point. I certainly would look forward to that, especially
two legs semifinal would be pretty tasty.
Exactly. If both teams stay in good form, I mean, that's what you want, right? You want best on best rather than a couple teams limping into a cup semifinal. So, yeah, I mean, okay, so kind of flipping over to what to expect this upcoming weekend. Again, we're in this phase of the season where there's a lot of interconference stuff, but since the Whitecaps just played the New York Red Bulls, the Red Bulls play Miami this weekend. I think that's a tasty one for sure. I'd like to see the Red Bulls take Miami to task if they could. I feel like a lot of what the Red Bulls do might give Miami some problems. Just in terms of that intensity, that directness at times, you know, if some of those aging veterans for Miami get caught forward, the Red Bulls might be able to put them in a world of hurt, but we'll have to see because, you know, Messi's continued to find the back of the net and you can't deny that. Flipping over to the West, there weren't any great matchups for me, but RSL, we mentioned top of the table, they'll face off and match up against SKC. Could be interesting. Sporting's kind of been a mixed bag. They've had some really good performances, some pretty mediocre ones. And then the Galaxy looking to bounce back against the Sounders, who are just looking to find their footing in some way. So that could be interesting as well.
Yeah, lots to dive into. I guess quickly, Red Bulls, Miami. That game's going to finish 5-4. Remember that. It's going to finish 5-4. Red Bulls played Miami without Messi. They won 4-0 against a similar backline to what they'll see today or in this game. They can score four. Even New England scored one against this Miami defense, which, you know, apparently with how things have been going for Caleb Porter and the refs, they'll take that as a win. But that Miami offense is just man, messy. I mean, you don't even have much analysis to say. Like, it's just messy. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, what is it, 16 goal contributions in 9 games or something absurd? Like, he is just, when he's healthy, he's on the pitch. It's just a different stratosphere of player. And honestly, as a side note, I'm so fascinated to see the Whitecaps game versus Miami if Messi plays, because it's like, it's the complete antithesis of styles, because the Miami attack is the Messi attack. It's Messi pulling the strings, it's guys running. But then the Whitecaps defense is the success. It's no individuals. It's everyone has an equal responsibility. How does the ultimate like team first defensive system cope against the ultimate like one person first but really effective offense? Like, that battle is gonna break my brain to see like because you just know Vanni Sartini. He does. You've seen it. Like, Ricky Puig comes to town. No, you're not gonna man mark Ricky Puig, these other players. So how's it gonna look when it's Lionel Messi on the other side? Because that's a strategy. But as New England learned, they were trying to man mark Messi. And man, I think it was Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic posted this clip. If you want to go just watch Messi magic, because again, like, you can argue about how he's talked about the league. He's a fun player to watch. He's greatest of all time, if not, you know, one of them for a reason. Just look at the way it was Marc-Anthony Kay. Again, poor Canadians catching some strays on this show, man marking Messi. And Messi just jogs and Kay's just like looking at him like, you know, like a dog who's beside a snack, and you're just like waiting for the command to just, you know, you snap and you're just about to eat the snack up. Kay's just watching him. Messi just stops. And then next, you know, he just darts away, gets a pass, scores, and Kay's just sitting there like, you know, it's like when you're told to watch something and you blink and it's gone. And it's just like, that's the Messi effect. So, hey, maybe man marking isn't the way to go. So I'm so curious to see how that goes. But we'll dive into that matchup as it comes. Meanwhile, RSL SKC, there could be a bit of pressure on Peter Vermees. It sounds like the fan base isn't the happiest with him, especially after he entered MLS meme lore again. This guy's just a meme machine. You know, he's got the famous swearing gif against the Whitecaps. He thought Tanny Olawesi, hey, a positive Canadian story, Tanny Olawesi's goal, he thought it was offside. It was clearly onside. Brings an iPad to the press conference and just shows it and like doesn't say anything. Now this is so many good memes with like him showing things. RSL, great form, like we mentioned. That could be a game where maybe they win. Peter Vermees is in a bit of trouble for SKC. And lastly, yeah, the Galaxy. Can they bounce back after a rare slip-up? Or is this the game that Seattle finds themselves, like we mentioned, and then crisis will be averted in the Emerald City? We'll see.
Yeah, those should be good. Okay, that's it for the MLS chat. We're on to BC soccer only and the Canadian Premier League teams from this past weekend, and then League One BC. I mean, Alex, I didn't take in a ton of CPL action this weekend, but I did see Vancouver against York. I guess we'll start there. I mean, after a flying start for the Eagles, this is two tough losses on the road in a week. I think the Canadian Championship one, you know, while frustrating, it's one of those things you can kind of live with. Losing 3-0 to York, that's especially when this match was there for the taking in the second half and it just kind of got away from them. I think that's a tough one. You know, first time we've really seen some real squad rotation, and it just, the chemistry has not quite been there the same way with some different faces in the lineup.
Yeah, it was a tough one for Vancouver. Yeah, like you mentioned, they had it and they were pushing, and then just the wheels kind of fell off defensively. And I think credit to York. It's York, they can turn it on in these moments and play like one of the top teams in the league, but then also they can struggle for large parts of a game. It's so hard to know what to make of this York side, but for Vancouver more specifically, just some rare hiccups defensively. I think they cleaned those out. They were mostly pretty avoidable mistakes watching it back. Like one was kind of the trailing runner and Renan Garcia didn't realize that a guy had kind of ghosted into his blind spot. I think it was on either the right or the first right goal or the Salanovich goal. Just like little marking things you figure out. The first right goal actually was quite unlucky, if I'm not mistaken. Like it was just a ball that deflected into a perfect area for right. They'll clean up those defensive errors. They've been really good defensively to start the year. It's really just what you saw in the attack is just they didn't have that same cohesion. They were so good in the first two games in the attack, despite only, I think they only generated like 0.5 XG in this game. They're still the top team in the league in terms of XG for mainly because of how dominant they were in the first two games. And it just felt like in this one, they didn't have that same click, that same chemistry. They weren't able to get Batar into space as much. They weren't able to get Diaz and Dyer as much of the service that they thrive on. I think that was the big thing, but that's something to watch for, that teams are going to know how dangerous that front four is, no matter who it is. If it's Fisk, Kintav, Tahid, as Tahid started in this game, they're going to play it hard. So can they generate those sorts of big chances they kind of did in the first two games where they caught Valor and Halifax by surprise almost with how fluid and dominant it is, will be something to watch. But yeah, big test for them this week against Calvary. I think that'll be a good chance for revenge, and maybe they can, because against Calvary, they definitely had the game there for the taking. So this will be a good chance to show that, look, the York game, it happens. You lose on the road. In their eyes, they might only feel it was a 1-0 loss that they kind of let turn into a 3-0 loss. Well, then prove that against York and show that that was just a bit more of, you know, also a long week probably catching up to them as well.
Okay, so the other CPL matchup from this past weekend, speaking of Calvary, Pacific and Calvary, 0-0 draw. Alex, I didn't see this one. You were on it for CPL Soccer doing the socials. So what do you take away from that matchup? I mean, Pacific, you know, continuing to produce some good results, I think showing the fact that they'll still be a threat this season and that, you know, despite some of the questions around the roster, they're still a good team.
Yeah, it was a gutsy performance from Pacific, and literally, because apparently there was a stomach bug, according to the broadcast, that hit some of the guys on Pacific. Like Emil Gazdov, so great to start the year, had to miss out entirely. Sean Melvin, former Whitecap, gets his first Pacific start, keeps a clean sheet. So yeah, literally a gutsy performance in the sense they go there a bit shorthanded, have to deal with that, and they grinded out a 0-0 win with a good defensive showing. They shut things down in key moments, and they could have won at the other end. Rayon Moore had a glorious chance. Marco Carducci, former Whitecap goalkeeper, shouting out all the former Whitecap goalkeepers. He made a very nice save to keep it 0-0. So for Pacific, honestly, you can't be mad at that. A road point against a team like Calgary, who had the best home record last year, a place where Pacific has always struggled in the regular season. You take that. And also they could have won that game. And I think, you know, as Rayon Moore continues to find his feet, he'll start putting away those chances. He's, of course, looking for his first goal as a penalty one and an assist. And they've been really good defensively, still yet to allow a goal. They have the second best XG against in the league. Only Cavalry is better because Cavalry's allowed a ridiculous like 1.2 XG in three games, which is just, you know, it's wild. So for Pacific, a lot of positive signs for them to take, because that sort of defense will help them in the league. It'll help them in the Canadian Championship, which of course they have this week, starting this week. So Pacific can be encouraged with the defense, because I think losing Didic, some were worrying, oh, their defense is going to struggle. Can Gazdov take a step forward? Those questions have been answered. It's just, can the attack figure itself out? I think that's something that will come, because we haven't really seen Turco Vinu, the new signing at the 10. Eamon Salouf hasn't really been up to speed. Josh Hurd, you know, hasn't had the chance to. This was his first start, finally, I think it was. So that's obviously something to keep an eye on as the games go along.
Yeah, I've been impressed with Pacific to start the season. I thought that it might be a bit rough off the bat, and they've shown their ability to be gutsy. To, I think, you know, Merriman's leadership, his ability to get this group together has been really standout. And, you know, a tricky test upcoming against League One BC opposition. I think, you know, those are Not something to be taken lightly, and we'll get to see that for the second year in a row. A good matchup between the Rovers and the Tridents over on the island. And I know, Alex, you're headed out over there, so should be a really good one. That is, we're recording, that's Wednesday night, I believe, correct? Yeah,
Wednesday
Wednesday.
night, starlight, 7 o'clock. If you're able to make it out, I know a good chunk of the Swan Guardians will be making it out for Rovers. So shout out to them. I know Pacific fans will love a cup tie. Like there's these clubs played each other last year. Some former Pacific players are on Rovers, or at least Matteo Polisi's back after a stint in Greece. This Pacific team will know what this Rovers team can do. Should be a cool game. It's great cup game, right? League One versus Pro. It should be a fun one.
Now, obviously, that's not the matchup we expected. Expected it to be a all Victoria, all Island affair, and things at the last minute had to change, obviously. But nonetheless, very thankful that they're going ahead with this match and that Pacific didn't just get a bye or something, because this is the right way to do it for sure. Okay, final section of the show. We'll talk a little bit of League One BC from this past weekend. As Alex mentioned off the top, I was out in Burnaby checking out Burnaby FC. It's their first game, but first games for both the men's and women's club. But it feels like, because it's an amalgamation of these smaller clubs, it's kind of like a League One BC entrant for the developmental pathway in Burnaby youth soccer. It feels like a club that already has a bit of identity and history, which I think was cool. Great support there in Burnaby, especially as the afternoon went on and as the weather improved. I'll just kind of dive into, I guess, some impressions. 3-1 win for Burnaby from the women's side to start things out against Harborside. I thought, I was saying to you, Alex, before the show, Harborside held a lot of possession, was really very good through most of the first half, but just could not get any final product. Burnaby looking a little unorganized early on, couldn't really link up play and just kept handing the ball back to Harborside. But they found the goal through Isabella Mussolini at the end of the first half, shot from outside the box, and it's 1-0. Now there was a bit of like a, there was a very unfortunate moment in this match. I believe it was an Achilles injury for one of the Harborside defenders. And that actually led to a goal being scored subsequently off that play, which then Burnaby essentially allowed Harborside to score a goal to begin the second half to kind of erase that. So really, this was like more of a 2-0 result for Burnaby. And I feel like that injury kind of took some of the sting out of the match for Harborside. They weren't quite the same after that. And I think Burnaby also kind of found their form as things went on. They've got a lot of good players, as I mentioned, a lot of former or current SFU players, and obviously that's a very good women's side there on the hill. So I think an impressive opening victory for Burnaby on the women's side. Still some things for Harborside, I think, to be encouraged about, and somewhere to build for the coming season. Now the men's matchup was very different in terms of the way it went. It was chaotic. It was end to end. It was high energy. You had a little bit of everything. There was a penalty. Emiliano Brienza, former Vancouver Whitecap, one appearance, albeit very short for the first team. He scores from the penalty spot. And then you had a couple players for Harborside. I apologize. I'm going to just have to pull it up here because I want to make sure I get these names right. But two Island vets who I thought were just absolutely balled out for Harborside, really created everything they could on the attack. So Suka Berry, number 7 for, kind of like an inverted winger number 10 for Harborside. A couple of balls he played into the box were just tremendous. One was like, cross field right to the back post, onto the foot of the striker, and it was like a tap-in goal. And it was one of those ones where half the team ran to the guy that made the assist because it was just that good. And then the other one, I'm gonna try to get this right. Billy Bagiopoulos, he's the striker up front. Veteran for Harborside, had 2 goals. So it was a goal and assist for Barry, 2 goals for Bagiopoulos. those two guys really ran the show for Harborside, and I think it could be a lot of fun to watch them this season. And then Burnaby, it was just kind of a team performance. They, you know, maybe it was a little less run and gun from them, but they were able to find some goals when they needed it. And Lachlan Will, the forward, was able to get two goals for Burnaby as well. So that one was entertaining. Will found that second goal in the 81st minute. It kind of felt like Harborside might walk away with all 3 points. They were up a goal. They were continuing to create chances, and then they just kind of got hit in a moment where Burnaby found themselves on the ball. But, you know, ultimately, I think both teams off to a start, and lots of good things to look back on. So, yeah, exciting football. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season. You got Burnaby again this upcoming weekend. They are taking on Unity, I believe. Yeah, that's on Saturday. So another good doubleheader out in Burnaby on Saturday. And then, you know, TSS and the Vancouver Whitecaps, FC Academy, playing each other on Sunday. I saw, didn't see this one in person, but the Whitecaps Women's Academy, man, they're just like
juggernaut.
Absolute team wreckers, like just no, you know, no F's given, scored as many goals as they want. So man, you want to see some high quality women's footy. And you know, it's almost like, you know, they got some 15-year-olds on that team as well. Like it is crazy, the talent in that group. So yeah, I would encourage you to check that out, especially if you know, want to go support the Rovers as well and want to see some of these young women doing really cool things. That is this Sunday. And then Alex added this one in for those on the island, Harborside Rivers on Saturday. So yeah, if you're out there on the island and want to check it out, I would encourage you to do so as well. Yeah, that's kind of my notebook. I know you can maybe dive into a couple of the other results on opening weekend in League One, but it was cool. You know, despite as my first experience with League One, because I've been in person at least, because I've been away for the last couple of years. And man, there's been a lot in the lead up to this season about, is this going to continue to exist? Yeah, what's going on with the ownership? How, you know, teams dropping out, can teams pay to participate? How are they going to get sponsors? All this stuff, which sucks and is like deeply unfun. And, you know, ultimately I love being out in these kinds of venues, seeing local players honing their craft. Everyone there is so excited about the product, so excited to be there and support it. And that's just contagious. Like that, you come away just feeling good about the game and feeling good about the event you are a part of. And so I just, yeah, when I have the opportunity, I definitely want to continue to do that, because I think it's fantastic for the pyramid here in BC, and something that, you know, despite all the politics and money and stuff behind the scenes, we've got to find a way to keep this going in the long term, because it's really important.
Yeah, it's huge, right? You need the lower league football to grow. It's a huge part in Europe. Those, you know, yeah, the, you know, these Premier League is huge in England, but so is non-league, right? It's these teams who, it's semi-professional, it's people chasing dreams, it's people just playing because they love the game. It's a mix of everything. That's so great about it. And man, like, what is there not to like, right? You get, you know, you get intimate venues, you get, you know, good level soccer. Like it's usually pretty organized, pretty fun, some talented players. You get cheap beer. You're not paying $21 Budweiser's. Like a lot of these teams do cheap beer, cheap other stuff. So if you're in a, you know, you like that part of the game, you can see some pretty good players. You know, I just, over my 2 years of watching, I saw someone like an Emma Reagan play. She's now playing pro in Denmark and got a cap for the national team after. You've seen some of these Whitecaps players, like, man, it feels like four or five of them could play for the national team one day. Geneva Hernandez-Gray already got a taste of being in a camp, and I'm sure more will follow. And then even on the men's side, you know, someone like, you know, Gabo Escobar, before he went and had his stint with Halifax at the end of 22, got to see him play for the Rovers that summer. And there's some, you know, some other players that have made the step up to different pro ranks from the men's side, women's side as well. Like it's cool. It's good, a mix of everything that you want. So shout out to that, and hopefully that the lower leagues can continue to grow in whatever way is most sustainable, of course. So it's something where if these hiccups that ended up happening this year with the Highlanders, as unfortunate as it is. If it opens up things down the road, that's the goal. You don't want a loss like that to be in vain. So fingers crossed. But yeah, decent weekend of action. Of course, the Whitecaps cruised versus Unity 5-1, like you mentioned. Kira Blundell, hat trick. She's a lethal number nine, someone to definitely watch on that group. Meanwhile, the Whitecaps men, defending League One BCG playoff champions, they drew Unity 1-1 in a tight game. Meanwhile, over up in Kamloops, Altitude made the trip to Rivers. It was a pair of draws in that one, 2-2 in the women's game, 1-1 in the men's game. Rovers, of course, men and women had a bye this week with there being seven teams. So they get set for the Whitecaps, like you mentioned, for both women and men, but with the men having the trip to the island in midweek to deal with as well. So that's, again, you know, a chance to see some of these guys who, hey, if someone impresses in the championship game on Wednesday, you can go see them live in person on the weekend too, which is always nice and cool, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool. You can do the, you know, if you're really feeling it, you can do the TSS double this week and see a lot of good footy over the course of, you know, a couple of days. So yeah, I encourage everyone, you know, if you nothing to do on a weekend afternoon and you're looking to get out, get some fresh air and take in some really good football, definitely worth checking out, especially on the weekends where there isn't, you know, there isn't an MLS match to go to. There isn't CPL, you know, or just whatever might fit your schedule. So man, I really enjoyed my experience and yeah, can't wait to take in more.
No, it's hopefully we'll be curious to see how the year goes along. But yeah, like you mentioned, some good ones out in the lower mainland and on the island this week. Definitely worth tucking into. But on that note, we're finishing off a marathon of a third sub episode. So shout out to all you who've stuck around for, I think it's exactly 2 hours. We started right around, 2 hours ago here on my watch. So shout out to all you who stuck around. We're definitely in a bit more of a storytelling mode this week. But if you appreciated that, it was definitely a good one, as always. With myself and Sam, pleasure to be here and enjoy episode 202. Of course, you can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Alex Gongaruzic, on Instagram Threads at AGR on the case. Of course, lots of live soccer to dive into this week. Took things a little easier. Hung out with some family, watched some Canucks, all the usual diddy-dada. This week you got some Whitecaps, got some League One BC, got, of course, Canadian Championship in midweek. It's busy. And I'll be doing my best to keep up with it all there. But yes, as usual, if you enjoyed the show, make sure to leave a like, leave a 5-star, leave a comment, whatever you feel up for doing. You can follow the pod as well on Twitter at Third Sub Pod, because that's, of course, where it goes up on social media, as well as in your pod boxes. But I'm sure you know all that good stuff. So I'll throw it off to Sam to close out the show.
Yeah, you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Robert on Twitter, at thethirdsub.ca. You know, we've added a little bit of extra coverage. We have a couple new people getting in the fold. So a shout out to Marco, who wrote his first Vancouver FC article recently, covering that disappointing match on the road against York. And yeah, we're going to continue to dive into some League One BC stuff, more CPL content, as well as all the regular Whitecaps coverage. So stay tuned for that. Thanks everyone for listening to the show. Again, just encourage you, you know, you have a question, you have a comment, whatever, whether it's on the website, on social, feel free to reach out and let us know what you're interested in or just something you noted. We love the feedback. So thanks so much for listening, everyone. Have a good weekend upcoming, and we'll chat again soon.